Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. With former UN head Kofi Annan unable to get an agreement to stop the year-long bloodshed in Syria, we'll begin with an analysis of where the civil war in Syria is heading and whether we will end up with a Somalia on the Mediterranean with remnants of the regime and rebels fighting over chemical and biological arsenals. Robert Baer, a former CIA officer who knows both sides, Syrian army generals and the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood, joins us. Then, following the HBO movie Game Change that revealed the fractious inner workings of the McCain-Palin campaign, we will examine the candidate who lost the last presidential election but has since bitterly campaigned against President Obama and his foreign policy, recently calling for a war against Iran and for a bombing campaign against Syria. A former classmate of John McCain's at the Naval Academy, who spent 8 years as a POW in North Vietnam, Dr. Philip Butler, joins us to talk about the man who is still running against Obama. Then finally, we will speak with Elaine Pagels, a professor of religion at Princeton University and the author of a new book, Revelations, Vision, Prophecy, and Politics in the Book of Revelation. We will discuss the appeal of damnation and destruction that America's religious right has for this apocalyptic vision of a war between good and evil, and their investment in the end times that has brought about a peculiar alliance with the right-wing government of Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm now joined by Robert Baer, who is a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
Good morning.
And the president seems to sort of, in spite of his high-minded pronouncements, basically the policy towards Syria is one of inaction. And he's now apparently, at least the assumption is that U.S. intelligence officials have been set loose on the press to give briefings that are basically saying that Bashar al-Assad is firmly in control and increasingly willing to use his military against the badly overmatched opposition groups. This has led to former Deputy National Security Advisor Elliot Abrahams saying that the Obama administration is politicizing intelligence on Syria to justify doing nothing. What's your understanding?
Well, you know, this thing hasn't turned out the way I expected it to, in the sense that I thought that the Arabs, especially the Gulf Arabs, start pouring money and equipment into the Syrian opposition to the rebels, but they haven't. At the end of the day, they were afraid this might escalate, that the Iranians might do the same in Bahrain. So the Syrian rebels are being starved day by day, and you know, the place has been hit by snowstorms. They run out of ammunition. They run out of medical supplies, everything. It's simply the inaction in the West and the Arab world that is putting an end to this revolt. I think, you know, it's hard to say, but once Homs was taken over by the Syrian military, and once the Syrians understood they could get away with using their elite units and their tanks to take these towns, they're going to keep going until they've got this. It's going to be very bloody. On the other hand, you know, if you look at Abrams, you know, everybody urging McCain, urging the United States to enter this, there are no clean-cut lines of confrontation. You know, that whole, from Idlib to Homs, is mixed between the two sects, between Alawites and Sunnis. And then you also have the question of the Christians are still the Alawites. They're a small minority. They've banded together, as they always have. And you have a very effective army, which is crushing this. This is something that Libya never had, an effective army. Gaddafi destroyed the army completely, whereas Assad, especially the father, Hafez al-Assad, created an army that was essentially coup-proof, capable of taking these cities back, and he could maintain the cohesiveness of elite units. And this is really, you know, paid off in the end.
So what they've done is they've crushed Homs brutally, and now they're just taking them on piecemeal. Now they're in, what is it, Ibid in the north? And
Irbila,
I mean, in the north, right? And so, and that's right next door to the sanctuaries in Turkey. What do you think the key roles are? Of course, Turkey, Qatar, who apparently have supplied arms and even a brigade, and Saudi Arabia. So, can't you look at this, Robert Baer, as a proxy war within a proxy war? In other words, the West against Putin and Russia, who steadfastly are supporting Assad and supplying him with arms. And then you've got within the Arab world, the Gulf and Saudi Arabia supporting the rebels and Iran supporting the Assad regime.
Well, you have multiple agendas here. You look at China. They're worried about the Muslims in the West, the Uyghurs, rising against China and the Tibetans. They want to establish the right for a sovereign government to go in and use heavy armor against the people. And as far as Russia goes, they want to retain the same right in the Caucasus. If there's another Chechnya, they want to be able to send the Red Army in and destroy it, you know, flatten like they did Grozny in the 90s. And so they very much ideologically side with Bashar al-Assad. The Arabs, for a while, tended to look at this conflict as, look, we lost Iraq. The invasion in 2003 essentially turned Iraq over to the Shia Muslims. And what we'll do is we'll take Syria for us, for the Sunnis, get rid of Bashar al-Assad, force the Alawites out, and we'll be even. You know, but like I said, the deeper they get into this conflict, the more over their head they are. And these people need anti-tank weapons. You know, there's a lot of them available. They have to be smuggled across the border, but it's not impossible. But facing this armor, even in a city, they will be destroyed.
So why, given the amount of money and arms that the Saudis and the Qataris, to a lesser extent, have, what's the problem? Why haven't the Free Syrian Army been better armed? Now, I understand that the entire Syrian opposition seem to be much better at arguing amongst themselves than getting their act together.
Well, I think they're divided. There's no doubt about that. You know, and there's different parts of it. In this revolt was very spontaneous. It was not created, you know, in the Gulf by the Gulf Arabs. That's an outside act revolt. It's just wrong. The Bashar al-Assad and the Alawites are making that up. But you know, you have to look at this. You know, in the Middle East, it's like playing billiards. You have to look at all the angles. And one of the angles is Bahrain. And Iran is very much committed to leaving Bashar al-Assad in power. So what the Gulf Arabs are afraid is that in some act of reciprocity, the Iranians are going to start arming the Bahraini opposition, you know, bring down that kingdom. And then you've got Kuwait and then United Arab Emirates. I think they're really, they understand they're sitting on a volcano of sectarianism in the Middle East, and they're pulling back. You know, they're keeping their fingers crossed that Iraq doesn't go up again in a major way, and that Lebanon as well, which is divided between the two sects. So I think that, you know, the caution has overtaken their rhetoric.
So, but what defense does the Obama administration have against neoconservatives like Elliot Abrams from the Chinese National Security Advisor in terms of you know, the criticism that Obama's Syrian policy is a complete failure and that essentially the Assad regime's patrons in Tehran have scored a huge victory?
Well, you know what I would do? I would tell Elliot Abrams and the rest of these people, you know, wanting another war in the Middle East, they should suit up. I spent a lot of time in American military bases, and they're always, we'll take orders and go to the next war, but they are worn out. Equipment's worn out. All of our special forces have been multiple deployments. They're tired. They've taken a lot of losses. You know, they're getting out of the military. They're not coming back to jobs. And you know, they're not whining. I'm just saying the military's of all volunteer military is worn out. And if we want to engage in these conflicts in the Middle East in a serious way to divide these forces, you'd have to bring back the draft. It's a bit of an exaggeration, I know, but that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to share the pain. Now, there are intermediate steps. You could establish no-drive zones and use cruise missiles against Syrian armor. which, you know, I think you might have to consider if this gets really bad, if it turns into a Rwandan-like ethnic cleansing, we may have, you know, as human beings, be obligated to protect these people. But that's, you know, that's a big question.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Baer, who's a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq and Lebanon, the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. So what about the idea then that this... if it's a stalemate now, in the well, it's not a stalemate as much as the Syrian army is rolling back the Free Syrian Army, which is a ragtag group of very brave but completely undersupplied volunteer soldiers. If they're able to launch a guerrilla war, and you know Al Qaeda, of course, is trying to get on the act because they see an opportunity, and they probably also recognize their essential irrelevance. What about this scenario that some have suggested that this could end up as a kind of Somalia on the Mediterranean?
There's a couple of Syrians that are leading the. You know, the opposition, the rebels now, and one or two of them had been with bin Laden. We know who they are, but, you know, they were sort of fellow travelers, and they were never considered, you know, mainstays of Al-Qaeda. They sort of drifted to Afghanistan, drifted to Pakistan. Now they drifted back to the Levant, to Lebanon. But I think what we're doing, we're prisoner of this propaganda that Al-Qaeda is everywhere. You know, we're looking at the Yemeni conflict as, oh, it's Al-Qaeda against the central government. That's a huge exaggeration. That country has been in one war or another for 1,000 years. And now to paint these forces in the mountains of Yemen as Al-Qaeda is not helpful. Same way with Syria. There's simply, you know, we a lot of us predicted, and, you know, I feared for sure that this was going to happen in Libya, that some sort of Al-Qaeda would arise in Libya and the chaos there and, you know, start cutting the heads off of foreigners. Well, you know, it hasn't happened. It's been chaotic, but they've kept that, you know, militant Islam is very much suppressed, and it really hasn't turned into a catastrophe. And I'm not sure Syria would either. So I think it's more than anything, this is an argument that the people are making that don't understand Syria. I served there for many years, and I don't claim to understand it. But I just don't see the militant Islamic groups taking this over in spite of the car bombs. You know, the Syrians are very sophisticated people. You know, any place in the Arab world, they're considered sophisticated. And I don't see them drifting off into, you know, some caliphate establishing itself in Damascus. I just don't see it.
Well, I don't see it either, but some people see a protracted civil war / guerrilla war where you have the Syrian army against the Muslim Brotherhood. You know both sides. You know Syrian army generals, and you know some of the leaders in the Muslim Brotherhood. Is this a situation where it's become a cycle of blood revenge, and it's likely to get more intense as opposed to less, which is what, you know, Kofi Annan's...
Yeah, I'm sort of like you and everybody else. I go by last week's scorecard, and the regime does seem to have the upper hand. And without anybody coming to the assistance of these people, and as much as you can make any call in the Middle East, I think that Bashar al-Assad will win. I don't expect a coup d'etat there. Don't expect any mercy on his part, but you're going to see these units, which are officered by Alawites. There's no Sunni. What we can't forget is there's no Sunni officer is in control of a unit that could turn on the regime. That has been bred out of the system a long time ago, 30 years ago. It's just not going to happen. So you're going to see, like, the 4th Division, the Praetorian Guard, you know, move north, take these cities back one at a time. You're going to see Bashar al-Assad making separate deals with, for instance, the Kurds. He already has. He's going to get Hezbollah in Lebanon to cut off arms supplies coming in. And again, going back to the Turks and the Gulf Arabs, they have been, it's been a lot of rhetoric on Al Jazeera, but no action.
But isn't there a broader arena here in the context of the so-called Arab Spring? It's hard not to see analogies between Syria and Egypt, for example, the same autocratic, military-based government, bunch of kleptocrats feeling...
Nothing has changed, you know, seriously. I mean, very little has changed. Ultimately, what rules the street in the Arab world is the T-72 tank. Who's ever got the tanks and the artillery can control the urban areas. That's an exaggeration, I know, a bit, but you see the same thing in China. You know, 4 June, Tiananmen Square, it was the tanks that took back Peking. You're going to see the tanks go into Western China and on in the same way with Moscow. What we're seeing more than democracy breaking out, and, you know, I'm a big supporter of democracy, but the fact is we're seeing the military has become predominant. And if the Islamists in Cairo want to get in, they're going to have to cut a deal with the Egyptian military, and they very well could. And whatever succeeds Bashar al-Assad or he stays in, it's ultimately going to be the military who says what's going to happen.
But that's not to say that what is driving this change in the Arab world is a refusal on the part of a younger generation to accept the status quo. And they've shown enormous bravery, both in Egypt and in Syria. In the case of Egypt, I think unquestionably the Islamists and the military have undercut the revolution. And in Syria, the Assad regime won't allow the revolution to continue. But that doesn't mean the impulse is going to go away.
Oh, I don't think the impulse will ever go away, but you have to look at Iran in 2009, where the impulse didn't go away, but the regime continued to control the streets with extreme violence. And that's been the model so far. And the impulse never goes away, and all these societies could stand, you know, to have some democracy and a new generation coming in, because as you said, it's a kleptocracy. And even if we don't get changes the next 10 years, important changes, this will rise again with a new generation.
So when the White House, as Hillary Clinton has and the president has had on a number of occasions, say that this regime will fall, what are they talking about? What kind of timeline is that? Are we talking about?
Oh, you know, they're talking from ignorance. Like, you know, a month ago I thought, geez, these guys can't last. But it's really, they don't have anybody in Damascus. It's hard to keep track of. They don't have anybody inside the regime that can tell them what they're thinking, what they're planning. A lot of it's rumor. And, you know, all of us in the West, unless you happen to be Syrian, you know, living in Damascus, you become prisoner of exiles or, you know, pundits or whatever. So what the White House was simply doing a month ago was projecting a trend and not any sort of inside knowledge. And, you know, I'm sympathetic in the sense that I fall trap, you know, I fall to that too.
Well, it's a bit of an irony at the end of the day that the repressive Saudi regime that you wrote about in Sleeping with the Devil, the notion that they are a force for democracy, I mean, there's so much similarities between the Assad family and the al-Saud family, it's kind of embarrassing.
Well, I mean, they were, you know, and for so many ways, the Syrians and the Saudis are attached at the hip. I mean, there's so many intermarriages between families. I mean, a Saudi royal, the first thing he does is go to Damascus and finds a wife, you know. They have a lot of emotional attachments to Damascus, and they have a lot of emotional attachment to holding on to the status quo.
Sure. Bin Laden himself went to Syria to look for a wife.
His mother was Syrian.
Right. Well, I thank you so much. Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the grim briefing, but a realistic one nevertheless. Again, right. I've been speaking with Robert Baer, who's a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, dealing with the new Iranian superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife, Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the real John McCain.
زخ رصاص على الناس العزل يا حيف واطفال بعمر الورد اعتقلن كيف زخ رصاص